Right. 3, 2, 1. Welcome to episode 39 of Chasing Sound.
Hi, everybody.
This is Andrew and Kirk. It's the day after Christmas.
Or the second day of Hanukkah.
And we just recorded a blues tune that we'll intro this podcast with. It's showcasing a pedal I got for Christmas. Yeah. Or actually, I got this pedal for babysitting for a weekend. But it happened around Christmas, so it's the DOD Phasor 201. And they actually spell it on the pedal with an O, so it's Phasor.
But Phasor.
I think it's one of the first, if not the first, phaser pedal. It's a two-stage phaser. Couldn't be more basic. It's got one knob.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, the people at DOD discovered some backstock of a ton of the original ones in the gray box, and they sort of played through them all and found the one that sounded the sweetest and cloned that for their reissue. And it's amazing. One knob, no switches, nothing. Just one big-ass knob to control speed. It is the best rotary simulator pedal I've ever played through with guitar.
Nice, yeah.
When I got it, I played it straight into a 4-watt tube amp, which we did the blues song on, or the guitar anyway. And it sounded so good. I put it on my pedal board. I took my tremolo off, and then this is sort of like the modulation du jour spot. I took the trim off and put it in there, and it sounded fucking amazing with all the delays and all the other shit I got. But then I kept thinking, like, boy, it sure sounded awesome on just that tube amp with nothing else.
Yeah.
So I kept going back to that, and that's how I came up with that blues number. I had just that rig set up in my room, and I was listening to those old John Lee Hooker records, like his first ones from 49 through like whatever 53.
Okay.
Where it was just him stomping on the board. Like a band couldn't play along with him. He would change tempos according to where he was at in the song emotionally. So backup bands couldn't do it. So some producer came up with the idea of just micing up a board and letting John Lee stomp out his beat. And they ended up becoming some of the highest selling race records of that whole era.
Wow.
People really locked into how crude it was. I think a lot of blues players, from the stuff I've read, maybe didn't like John Lee so much. And you know, John Lee and B.B. King were both kind of like, they had heavy limitations. B.B. King didn't play chords. You know, he didn't read music, but he was still a band leader, you know, and a badass one at that.
Uh-huh.
And John Lee was kind of similar. It's like, you know, whatever he was lacking in skill, he made up for it with charisma and this this calamitous yearning, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what we did. Andrew put on his old-timey hat, his blues hat.
I did.
And he got out his hard-bottom dress shoes.
I did, yeah, which I... Yeah, and I stomped that board. I went out to the shed and got me some scrap lumber.
Some motherfucking leftover pedal board lumber.
Yeah, that was pedal board Mach 1. And it was, man, it was a sad attempt. Which then I chopped up to make Mach 2.
Yeah,
so, you
Mach
know,
2 looks good.
In true American, you know, frugal fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this ain't working. I reckon I'll chop it up and use it for parts.
For kindling. It made for a good stomp board, though. And you stuck a mic underneath it. Like a 2x4 on top of two cut smaller pieces.
Yeah.
So it made like, you know, a crude kind of table
for
a very short person. And he put the mic underneath that, and he did an overhang mic too, but the overhang mic sounded like shit. And once he cut that out of the mix to where it was just the mic buried under the board, that was it, man.
That's all we needed.
It was right on the money.
Just needed that, the other side of the board.
So you got some gear, some Christmas time gear too. Why don't you run us through that shit you
got,
Andrew?
Oh yeah, ain't nothing like Christmas for getting gear. I got some new. Well, my father-in-law has been listening to this podcast and enjoying it, and was like, wanted to help me out. He's an old radio man himself,
mm-hmm.
And so he sent me some cables. In fact, we used. I use his cables to record there, and I'm using them right now on this here mic.
And so he sent you mic cables, right?
Mic cables.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to myself right now through a new pair of headphones he sent. So those are
and I like those
very helpful.
Yeah.
They're keeping my ears nice and warm And
yeah, my ears are sweating. So those headphones are so small. What's the brand on that?
They're Sennheiser's.
They're studio headphones, but they're nice and
yeah, they're small. I think they're supposed to be like they're kind of designed to be kind of dual purpose. You can use them in the studio, and they're small enough to carry them around. And I guess like for the traveling musician, you can go. You can have your very own headphones in every studio. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah, I gotcha.
So you're not relying on some joker.
Well, so you don't get earworms or whatever. I can hear your neighbor leaf blowing.
Yeah, gotta get those leaves out of the way, man.
I know, it's so critical. So critical.
So critical. Christmas will be ruined if there's leaves covering it.
What else did you get, though? You said you got a power conditioner coming.
Oh, yeah, coming. I got a new mic and a power conditioner. So I'm excited about that, because then I'll finally have a power conditioner. If this thing is, if our recordings are too noisy, you can maybe that'll fix things. If you're like hypersensitive to
hopefully so
the extremely high ranges, that's probably just if you're still in your 20s and you're listening to this, or younger, because
before your ears are blown out.
Yeah,
I mean,
before your ears have been destroyed by the world.
Yeah.
I got a ribbon mic, which I've been wanting to use for a while. And also it's a, you know, all the ribbon mics have the bipolar, what do you call it? Figure eight pattern, which then I can do the mid side trick, stereo recording trick, which I'm excited.
I'm excited about the ribbon. Tell me what type of ribbon mic
is
it?
I got an MXL. Coming.
There's not that many affordable ribbon mics, really.
This is the one. This one was less than $100.
This still occasionally musician's friend will do the stupid deal of the day where it's a ribbon mic, and I think that's the one that usually goes up there. And I've heard that if you get one that was put together perfectly, it's right on. Some of them you have to like get in there and adjust, tighten the ribbon or stuff like that. I've read different reviews, but once you get it in place, it's supposed to be pretty damn good. And you know, as far as warmth for a guitar sound, you cannot beat a ribbon mic.
Yeah, that's what everybody was saying, is that, you know, once they start recording their guitar cab through it, they never want to go back.
You can't go back, yeah.
So that's cool. And so, you know, it'll also be interesting to record a violin through it, because you get the, you know, it's kind of like the other thing that I see using it for is the violin, so that I can get kind of like a room sound and a close sound at the same time, get a more ambient sounding violin sound from one mic. So
yeah,
we'll
Jesus.
See if that works.
Let's talk about that violin tone you were just getting on that blues. That was insane. We were trying to get Andrew's violin to sound like a harmonica, and what we ended up with was fucking a mellotron on fire.
Yeah.
Is what it sounded. And I don't mean like playing hot. I mean like literally fire melting away the mechanism as it is playing. It's what all do we use? Use that OCD drive clone. I ended up turning off that Soul Food and just pushing the Marshall setting on that OCD.
Yeah.
And then your new yellow compressor, the Moore yellow compressor, which is the clone of that, the famous Diamond compressor. And your Pog, your big fucking Pog.
Yeah, the Pog with just, was it just one extra octave on it?
I think so. One octave and then an effect filter.
The filter on it. Yeah. Which
is fun. It's like you just let go of the strings on that thing and it was like, rah, like just screaming its head off.
It was an angry harmonica fiddle.
I went out there and talked to Melanie for a second while you're recording that. She's like, what are you guys doing?
So many demons.
Yeah, it sounds like a train blowing through here. So that was cool. And then I think at the end of this, Andrew will play some Christmas music.
How was your Christmas,
Kirk? It was good. We hung out together, so you got to be there for some of it.
The presents.
We had a good jam at my place. We had a big get together feast with whoever stayed in Austin for Christmas, whoever didn't feel like flying home, and it was pretty good. We had a jam with my roommate's dad. He played some 60s folk. And Andrew and I accompanied him. And then, we didn't get enough freak out time jamming wise, but it was still pretty fun.
Yeah, it's nice. No, I mean, whenever we play with Ed, you know, it's like, it's, you know, he just wants to play with some good musicians, and he's a good musician himself. And
he wants to play, Wider Shade of Pale with accompaniment. So Andrew played bass.
Yeah.
And I played guitar, and we just like company. We played Dance Me to the End of Love, which I would like to do a version of that on this podcast if we have a good singer on sometime.
Definitely.
Just because after Leonard Cohen died, I think it would be cool to do that.
Totally. Yeah, it's like you could, man, somebody needs to get to recording a 2016 RIP tribute album. Because
mm-hmm.
We got some good ones that could go on there. Yeah, maybe dude, we should do that.
George Michael, Leonard Cohen.
I mean, all right, George, come on. All right.
I like some of his shit, man. Yeah, that Faith album is like, every song is a single.
Probably. I know. I've been resisting the urge to tweet, oh, there goes one of the greats.
Or just tweet, wham.
Well, I've seen some pretty funny, like, I thought you were going to wake me up before you go.
Yeah, that one time
he
got a little drunk and slammed into a newsstand in the UK. And then, some guy, it like left a huge dent in the newsstand, and some guy went by later that night and graffitied "Wham."
Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, we'll miss ye, George Michael. Why did you die so young? You seemed awfully young.
Yeah.
Leonard Cohen and David Bowie, a bit more understandable. Those were old dudes.
Yeah.
Very old dudes. Cohen even more so.
And you can't beat cancer, really.
No, you can't.
I mean, you can try.
Yeah,
but it's gonna get you.
What are you
gonna
do? I guess in some cases you can beat it, but it's, you know.
Well, you know, if you didn't smoke so much, David Bowie.
I do appreciate that Bowie smoked right to the end. That guy didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess after you already have terminal cancer, then.
I mean, Zappa too. That guy smoked cigarettes right to the end.
Let's see, who else did we lose from the musical community this year? I'm trying to think. There's some other big ones we're missing because, like, I don't know, everybody's really complaining about it.
Really. So Prince,
of course, Mr.
He belongs Purple, like way himself. Above George Michael on the death list.
I totally agree. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, George Michael. I don't know. You know,
I mean, I love Bowie.
Should have picked a sleepier year to die, George Michael.
Yeah, right. Waited one more year.
No, this is love you, George Michael. Faith is always going to be my favorite. Okay, so death happened, but that's, you know, that's not too exciting.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of always there.
Well put. What do we want to talk about then? Let's talk about life. Did you do any? What was your best gig of 2016?
Best gig of 2016. That's a good question. I would say I've had some really fun ones. Probably. Let's see. It would have to, top five gigs 2016 would probably be playing probably the tour to Colorado with the Mismatch was on there, playing some of those gigs with those guys because it was just pure and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Probably the first thing in the morning at Euphoria Fest with Cream Cheese Accident with a bunch of like dazed hippies. That was pretty fun.
Yeah.
That was a really good crowd and a good show.
And that was with Mismatch, right?
No, that was Cream Cheese.
Cream Cheese, okay.
Let's see. Classical music wise.
Wait, what about their side band Fecal Pickle.
Oh yeah, well that was a pretty fun set.
You guys
too.
Opened for
that was Sunrise at Head for the Hills.
But I'm not talking about that gig.
Yeah, and then we also opened for
the Trailer Park Boys.
The Trailer Park Boys
or Randy and Leahy.
Randy and Mr. Leahy. At Kiva.
How weird is that?
That was
San Marcos.
That was not my favorite gig because that crowd was terrible.
Yeah, they were there to see fucking
jerks.
Trailer Park Boys though. They didn't want to see your stupid lounge band,
right?
Enzo's fucking wet dream band called Fecal Pickle.
Yeah. But yeah,
but as far as like on paper, that's the gig of the year for me.
Oh yeah, I mean that was. I mean, as far
the
as
weirdest
like, name drop, you know,
and just bizarre. You went to San Marcos to open for the Trailer Park Boys, but not as your main band. As this bizarre potty humor side project of Enzo's.
Yeah, no, my favorite gigs, and then personally, I did my solo violin gigs have been my favorite. Of the year, most challenging and most rewarding gigs of the year, I'd say.
I think probably the most fun thing I did this year was your first one of those we did.
Yeah. At the Volstead.
It was a good crowd, and we were being funny, and it just went over really well.
Well, that was a long one too, because mm-hmm. the first one was like a 3-hour show, you know, which I don't think I've ever done 3 hours of just me.
You did 3 hours that night?
That was 2.5 or 3 hours. Yeah,
God,
we played.
Damn,
it was a long one. And then like when I got the call the second time, I was like, oh, here we go again, another 3 hours. And he's like, oh, by the way, there's two other artists on the bill. I'm like,
thank Christ,
hallelujah.
Yeah. Yeah,
sometimes less is more, right?
Yeah, that jazz band played that one.
Right, yeah, they played after us.
That one night, yeah, that was good.
I think both nights. I think that's a regular steady gig. So.
But there was the violin solo chick.
Right.
Played after us that one. That was like
that was the second time we
did
it.
That was the thing where the club owner filed for a grant, right, to get paid to mm-hmm. do the show. That's interesting.
He got some money from the city. And I did too.
People,
hey.
I did too. I got $50 out of
that. Boom.
People need to look into that more.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's the trick here in Austin. There's good.
There's grant
for the
money
arts.
For the arts, and a club owner could put on a show of different types of music, string players, whatever, some more world stuff, and probably even get it bankrolled.
Yeah.
By a liberal college town with grant money to spend.
That's right. Or just a liberal college. Just go straight to the source.
Or just a liberal with money.
A liberal, yeah. So let's see. So that was pretty rad.
Y'all played a festival with Mismatch when Bree was still in the group.
That was another great show this year. That was at the Farmgrass Festival. That was in the spring.
Cool.
That was their first big festival stage show. And that went really well. They won a contest to get into that.
They were super excited after that.
They were.
That was their first time playing a festival, I think.
And it went really well.
Festivals are nice. There's very often food and stuff for the bands.
Yes,
and
ice, free beer.
Iced down beer, yeah.
Yeah, and a tent you can hide in so you don't have to be one of the thousands.
First festival I played when I was like 16 or 17, we went to the Pleasure Island Music Festival. And it was the first they had some big names play out there at the Pleasure Island Music Festival. And I loved it, man. Like they had, we were only 17, but I had a fake ID. So the people in charge of like the catering table weren't too, you just show them an ID and they were cool with it. But they had like Ice House, which now Ice House is like the hobo beer. But back then, what you got a signal?
I'm sorry.
You worried about your mic, bro?
Freaking out because I'm just being quiet for a while.
Yeah, yeah. So the it freaks me out when I don't talk for a minute. What the fuck was I talking about? So they had Ice House, but at that time, Ice House was exciting because it was new. Now Ice House is like if you're living under a bridge and you only got $3, you get Ice House. But at the time, it was that was like a microbrew to people in Southeast Texas. Like, oh, this is new. It was before we had even gotten like Shiner Bock and Beaumont. So they had that and free nachos, and I was like, dude, because after playing alt clubs and like art galleries, that was where you played there was an art institute, art studio place in Beaumont, and that's like if you were in a punk band, death metal band, Jane's Addiction wannabe band, no matter what you did, you had a handful of spots to play, and that was where you played. So the festival was the first time that I had monitors where I could hear myself.
Yeah.
And that blew me away. I was doing backing vocals on a Beatles song. We did like this kind of rocked out version of Eleanor Rigby. And the singer was singing. And then it's like I came in on my harmony and I wasn't just Hail Marying it. I heard the whole thing just hit me in the face.
Yeah.
And it was the first time. And like, man, it blew me away. I'd never experienced anything like that. Monitors that do what they're supposed to do.
It's amazing.
It's unbelievable what you can pull off when you can hear everything correctly. Yeah.
And well, I think that's what these kids were so excited about because,
so. Festivals have the money to have shit like that.
That's right. And let's see what else.
I did a bonus episode. Yeah, that people can check out about the personal relationship to music and how people sort of hijack their reward system while listening to music. It sort of led into using music to sort of empathize with another character in time and using it to like time travel via the empathy highway.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
It
idea.
Led into, like Manson and Dennis Wilson, the drummer from the Beach Boys. So check that out. That was a fun talk. It's also There's good stuff on YouTube if you want to find out more about the Manson Beach Boys connection.
Okay.
Check it out. There's one of his, one of Manson's tunes actually ended up on a 1969 Beach Boys album, so.
There you go.
It's weird, but yeah, check out that bonus episode if you want to hear about all that shit.
Yeah, I feel like, my wife is a Manson aficionado.
She's reading a book about Manson right now, I think.
Yeah, and then she listened to that whole podcast series that was about kind of like the milieu of, the social milieu of L.A.? Yeah, L.A. at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty, it's very interesting, you know, how like accessible the celebrities were at that time, and you know how like practically everybody of every economic class could rub shoulders much easier than nowadays, and and lots of people also hitchhiked, and Manson kind of took a little advantage of that a couple of times.
Well, yeah, that's how he ended up living in Dennis Wilson's house. Like the story is Dennis Wilson is in his silver Ferrari driving on the highway, and he sees two young chicks, picks them up, takes them home, has a threesome, then goes off on tour. And when he comes back, Manson plus 20 half-naked chicks and a handful of dudes are living in his house.
Because he just left the girls behind, right?
Yeah. He's like, later, girls. So awesome. So bizarre.
There's milk in the fridge.
And instead of coming in the door and being like, what the fuck, man? He was like, oh, far out, yeah. And he just let it happen. They lived in his house for 6 months or whatever.
Yeah, craziness. But I mean, there was all peace and love, and nobody knew that Charlie Manson was...
Nobody knew how dark it could get.
Could get, mm-hmm. Yeah. And how bad the drugs could do. Ooh.
And how dark the Beatles could be as far as interpretation. Like, I don't know that anyone listened to the White Album the way that Charles Manson listened to the White Album. They say he would at his compound, right. He traded one of Dennis Wilson's gold records to this woman to get as a down payment on this compound, some ranch, and he moved all his followers there, and people were only allowed to listen to the Beatles or Manson's music, and that was it. His folk music. And I gotta say, man, before getting ready for that podcast, I listened to a shitload of Manson songs, and he is not a bad folkster.
Yeah.
He's like an American Donovan if he hadn't been such a fucking nutbag.
Well, yeah, apparently that was the thing. Nobody wanted to work with him because...
Dennis Wilson recorded in him, and the thing is, you know, it's funny.
He wasn't really into taking criticism.
And apparently. Nobody, yeah. And then the Beach Boys rewrote one of his lyrics, and a lot of people say that's what led to... Is the real murder, yeah. Is that he just like his words.
It's the Beach Boys' fault, yeah.
Well,
yeah. Well, anyway, yeah. Charlie Manson is a piece of work, isn't he? Hey, to change gears to another American crazy person, but mm-hmm. one who actually maybe brought more awesome things into the world than Charles Manson. I watched the American Experience on Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Which Nikolai Tesla, which answered a lot of questions about Tesla for me, like why we remember him, which if you're listening to this right now, it's because he kind of invented electricity as we know it. He made alternating current electricity the predominant form because he invented a alternating current engine motor. You know, the one that runs off of an electromagnetic field. Mm-hmm. Like, he invented that, and that's really his most important thing. But he got into, and then he had, like, probably about 40 other patents. I was really interested because he's kind of like a, sort of like Charles Manson. He was really, really stuck in his own head,
mm-hmm.
and not a very practical dude. Like,
you're popping. Like,
sorry, crazy. I'm trying to. Yeah, move, let me go sideways. Is that?
Yeah, less you don't have to get so close. Poppy? Too. Like, look how.
I don't know
how far away I am, and it sounds. I know, it sounds good.
But I like. I like my voice right here.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, so but anyway, Tesla. So the craziest thing out of it was that his business partner. was Westinghouse. He tried to work with Edison, but Edison was kind of caught up in his own version of electricity and
in commerce. That's why people remember Tesla fondly, is because he was unmolested by commerce.
Well,
he didn't care about money as
that's
much as
not. Well, he definitely didn't care about money, and that's kind of the point of his story. Is he was kind of dumb about so like
this is undoing. Too, yeah,
yeah. Because Westinghouse, when he originally gave him a contract, he was going to give him $2.50 royalties on every horsepower of energy generated through the alternating current system. Can you imagine what that would have panned out to over time? He would have been probably one of the richest persons ever, you know?
Yeah.
In all times.
Which I don't know if it would have made a difference in his life.
But what happened was they started to run out of money because generating electricity requires a lot of capital. And Westinghouse asked him to go back on the royalties, and instead of even renegotiating for anything, Tesla was like, "You're right. I won't take those royalties." And he just ripped up the old contract and took the new one. And and that was it of his. Like a normal person would have said, "Okay, how about 25 cents?" You know, like,
well, he didn't.
How about 10 cents?
He didn't care about shit like
I
that.
Know.
I mean,
and so then he like. He got kind of like, so that was kind of, you know, he got rich or he got wealthy off of his deals there. But
you said it answered a lot of questions about Tesla. Like,
well,
what?
So there's a lot of like woo woo stuff about Tesla out there, right? Like
he fell in love with a pigeon before he died. That's
well, that was
rumor,
actually
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
That was in there. He was upset. He was not very interested in people. He would work 20 hours a day and
yeah
I really
but
did,
I mean
yeah.
you know
so he was that but he had this pigeon that he was fond of.
But what was the meat of what the thing but, answered for you?
Oh, it's just like, you know, like he was a visionary. He was trying to this whole thing, like people think that like there's this crazy explosion event that happened in Russia and they think that like maybe it was Tesla. He sent some energy up into the air, and then because he was obsessed with this idea of like transmitting electrical energy, you know, through the air,
wireless,
to,
yeah, wireless electricity. And it's like instead of your data being wireless, imagine your power being wireless.
Right.
Yeah.
And he, you know, because he was generating these electromagnetic fields and the Tesla coils and stuff like that. But the thing was, those things were really impractical, and they didn't really pan out. They didn't really work.
They look more like science fiction devices, yeah.
Yeah, and they just never worked in their time, and or have since. And he tried to build like this really giant Tesla coil outside of New York, and he never had enough money to finish that project. He did. He had a smaller project like that outside of Colorado Springs that he ran, and that thing like was dangerous. I think he set his barn that he had it in on fire a couple of times. So he's just kind of like, he was one of those people who's just kind of like it was like he's like poetically out of control with his
people like to
talent,
read people
you know?
Like to read about him like Theremin. Yeah. he's the anti
right.
the anti
this is nice here,
man. That's insanely loud.
Yeah, is that too much?
It's way too much. You have a loud ass voice. Like you need to pull back twice as much as anybody else.
Ah, thanks, Eric.
Hey, it's production.
Anyway, it's just interesting to hear that, you know, like, but a lot of those ideas, he had like great, beautiful ideas, and then just they were not really real. You know, it's like one of those things where he's like uberly poetic.
Yeah, but he's a pop culture phenomenon. Like everybody's watched a documentary about him on Netflix or something. So was there anything that you found deeper than the average interest of Tesla? Was there anything that really stood out to you?
Well, I think it's just kind of like a case study in like how creative people. It was funny because I just watched it right after I watched a Coen Brothers movie the other day, and they often deal a lot about how like, think of like movies like Barton Fink, how like creative people, when they kind of get how they get exploited slash exploit the system mm-hmm. of America and capitalism. And I think Tesla's life is a very interesting case study in that, because he's somebody who has great creative ideas. And then the only way that any of those ideas are ever going to come to any sort of fruition is by engaging with the capitalist system. Mm-hmm. And you have to do it in the right way, you know? And so, you know, cause he, if he would have never, you know, he would have never been able to do it on his own. And at the same time, like the system has to kind of like, you know, has its own agendas and stuff, and the artist mm-hmm. can't expect it to empathize with the artist. You know what I mean?
No.
It's, and vice versa. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's very interesting how the whole thing works, because you know, I watched Hail Caesar, and it kind of talked about that a little bit too, because the main character in that is a Hollywood executive producer type mm-hmm. person. And you know, he's having to deal his personal struggle the whole time is whether he's gonna leave the studio and go work for Lockheed Martin or mm-hmm. Lockheed, you know. And he has to decide whether he's gonna work for artists or work for people who want to drop atomic bombs. mm-hmm. You know, and that's an interesting you know, and so he has to, like, he's kind of like struggling with that. Yeah. You know,
Barton Fink really captures the bizarre nature of Hollywood, and it does it from the beginning, sort of like Hail Caesar. It takes you back to an earlier time and really lets you see how the business has, you know, probably always been a little sick and a little running the opposite way from true creativity and breaking new ground. Speaking of breaking new ground, I watched that the Swiss Army Man last night after the Christmas feast, and that movie is fucking insane. I've never seen a movie weave all of its elements together in such a bizarre way.
Yeah, you're saying the music. In that is, you'll have a very strange.
It's just Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, and then the guy who was the preacher in There Will Be Blood. He also played the young Brian Wilson in that Brian Wilson movie. Genius actor. The guy who is apparently very picky about his parts. I've never seen him in anything truly mainstream. You know, always the bizarre stuff. But he, those two guys just nailed it. It's bizarre. You could argue that it's a 2-hour fart joke. But it's just the way you'll have one character sort of sing a song to himself to keep himself from going crazy, but it might just be something made up, like, I'm not going crazy, because he's, you know, trapped alone with nothing but a dead body for a friend. And then all of a sudden there'll be a delay on his voice, and then all of a sudden there'll be a harmony coming from the dead guy, and he's got some kind of delay on his voice, and it starts weaving, and then it'll just, like, set you down some other place, and it toys with you in a way that I don't think I've been toyed with so far in life.
Interesting.
So worth seeing just for how new it is, but it is really, as it progresses, it gets more and more just like those what the fuck moments keep happening.
That's cool.
Right up to the end.
Well, I like that you brought that movie up and how it has like kind of a very strange postmodern score.
Yeah.
Very meta. Yeah, I just finished Westworld 2.
Oh, so good.
Which the score in that is very meta mm-hmm. and very, you know, playing with anachronisms and cross mm-hmm. Cross musical platforms.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you got the player piano in the saloon that plays, you know, contemporary
Radiohead. Yeah,
but which is ironic because you got to think, like, is this so far in the future that Radiohead is old music and that's what they think of old timey music, you know? Like, it's very strange, the anachronism and the multiple time platforms or multiple time kind of like perceptions, I don't know, are very weird. in that mm-hmm. show. The other one is the other interesting score thing in there. There's, by the way, all the music is really well done. Mm-hmm. So it's all comes off very musical and very refreshing.
Well, they're not afraid to take risks with the music right. too in certain places, and I appreciate yeah, that.
Like they did, you know, that arrangement of Paint It Black was amazing.
That was killer. Yeah.
There was one when they take Maeve around the floor where they're training the hosts. Do you know what that song was? It's a string arrangement of this song, and it's
which
just
episode?
Super bittersweet.
Which episode?
I don't know. It's probably
or
like
describe what was happening.
It's when the lab technicians that are basically her little bitches
mm-hmm.
Take her around the floor
on a tour
on a tour because they're like she's like show me what's going on
yeah.
here right
I'm sure and, I would recognize that. I don't
and,
think
and
they'd...
it's super pathetic the music you uh-huh. know anyway but that's really good and the other moment that I really liked was the script supervisor guy character in there
mm-hmm.
he's
the
like
British guy
yeah.
yeah
he's a real tool mm-hmm. I liked that they used at one point when like the bad guys ride into town to shoot up the town and they use Carmen, you know, yon, dun, 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 dun,
yeah, yeah.
Dun. And I just thought that was kind of funny because to me it like said more about that character than what was actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
That he's just kind of like this real lazy, like, art aficionado and he's like, oh yeah, let's have some classical music when they ride into town and yeah, we'll use that. What's that one that's like da da da
very cheesy, yeah.
It's so bad. Like it's like not even, you know, and it's hilarious because it's not
yeah,
even
he's the character you're going
appropriate.
To, I mean, let's be real, in season two you're just going to enjoy the shit out of watching him being
oh he's
murdered.
Yeah, he's gonna hopefully be very slowly tortured.
Yeah, yeah. And, that's, they
and
build
we're all
that
gonna love
you.
It.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to mostly for next year, season two Westworld and season two of Stranger Things. Those are like my two
yeah.
Those are my shows of the year. But let's
so anyway.
I don't want to keep this show going all day. Let's talk about who were your favorite podcast guests of 2016.
Ooh, well that's hard because that was like almost all of our podcast guests.
I enjoyed everyone, but who jumps to your mind right now?
Really interesting conversations. Well, you know, I really enjoyed chatting with Roberto and Oliver for kind of like deep kind of people have just a really deep connection with music and it's clearly like all consuming and it informs not only like what they're doing in the world but also how they like, you know, experience the mm-hmm. world or how they you know, process the world and how they've kind of not only, you know, gotten their bodies to do the music, but also their, you know, minds and hearts to a certain extent. I felt like, I mean, all of our guests have that going on to some extent.
Sure.
But
we've had so many, I'm looking through them on my phone right now. Motherfucker, we've had a good year of guests.
Yes, we have.
So musically, I think like Jeff Mann, the drummer from Consider the Source,
that was
musically, that was some of the most fun I had. And then another one, but musically really got my rocks off would have to be Indradeep.
Yes.
Yeah, with his killer unique violin that's like a custom job. And
mm-hmm.
I just like, I could not stop geeking out. Conversation wise, you know, Roberto and then Chad from Switched On
yeah.
were both just good 2-hour talk epics.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, we've had a whole lot of fun looking through these.
Yeah.
So, Kayla, you know, Luddy was the folkster. She had, we played with her. I really liked the way her song sounded.
Yeah.
And then that episode you had Emily Jane White, where it was just the two of you. The music on that was badass too.
Yeah, she is a very solid performer, and everybody brought a little bit different. You know, some people were funny
uh-huh.
and silly, and just intensely entertaining, like Danny Malone.
Or yes, Danny Malone was awesome, and Bree and Billy's mismatch performance was good. Probably the last time those two were recorded together. Sarah Jane Hargis, though, with her badass pedal board and her insane flutes, That was a lot of fun. For a gearhead, you could not go wrong with her. Like, no. She was so much fun to talk about gear with. We got to have her back on so we can talk about the Allman Brothers more. I thought about doing for my bonus episode, like, calling her and talking about the Allman Brothers for 20 minutes and maybe throwing that in there.
Yeah.
Who else did we have?
Oh, let's see.
We did the airport episode with Sam Ray.
Yes,
we did that.
Sam Ray is an interesting creature.
That was...
And,
there was Matt's band Bell
Life.
Band Bell Curve. That was a good one.
Yeah, there's some fun human beings.
The incomparable Peter Stopchinski.
Yes.
Michelle, we just had her birthday party here. Yeah. Man, we should have recorded some of that. We have Michelle Olney, a violin player. She was episode 22. Her birthday was here at Andrew's house. And of course, anytime there's a musician's birthday at Andrew's house, like, all the stops come out. You get all these players together and we just take over the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who doesn't play goes off to a bedroom and hides from us.
Yeah, pretty much.
And man, that was, we had some good
take no good prisoners jams. Jam all night. That was great. And let's see. Yeah, just this has been very rewarding talking to everybody.
Uh-huh. Thor and, was this year too. Fuck. Thor might be my favorite. He's so smart. We had Oliver and Thor back to back. Ugh.
Right?
My cup runneth over.
Yeah.
There's only like maybe a couple in here where I'm like, meh. Most of them are pretty, and I'm not saying who, but most of them were pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Enzo was funny.
And we were dealing with this crazy roommate.
Matt Puckett. Shit, Matt was...
I know. Matt's headed off to New York to make children's music with his buddy up there.
Oh, you know what we could do? We don't have to if you want to play some music, Christmas music at the end of this. We also have that Toyland song we did last year With Josh.
Yeah.
Man, if you want to dig that up, because I bet no one listened to that episode. That was like episode number 4.
Right.
But man, that song turned out really good. That Nat King
Go
Cole.
Go back and listen to episode
Toyland.
4.
Toyland. I think it was episode 4, but maybe we'll dig it up.
I was thinking, So I've done a ton of Christmas music over the last couple of weeks, and so I've got a couple some things picked up. I was thinking of doing like kind of a, because we got a kind of a dark blues to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking we should just stay there and do this kind of dark tune called the Coventry Carol as the last one.
So, right on. What key is that in?
It's gonna be in F minor, but maybe we'll move it around a little bit. I don't know, but we can
I
capo.
Like F minor.
Yeah. So I think we'll go there, and and thanks again for listening to us.
Yeah, it's been a badass year for the tens of people out there who listen to our podcast. We love you.
Yes.
And we'll fucking see you next year.
Indeed we will.
All right, going out on, what's the song again?
This will be the Coventry Carol.
Let's do this shit. Bye, everybody.